watching it run. Gee, what a lovely crystal day. Rainbow soft hair blows through your hair in such a friendly kind of way. Do you suppose rocks really grow, or is it just this crystal day? Watching the town awaken, his concrete arms are shaking. Big city stores are yawning, blinking her eyelash awnings. Good morning wind, kiss me again, and let me taste your moonlight spray. I can't believe I'm really me, part of this lovely crystal day. Now country scenes roll past me, got just enough time to last me. Cows and the sheep are talking, the telephone poles are walking. That setting sun, having its fun, giving somebody else a day. Wish it was me, boy can't you see, I'm gonna miss this crystal day. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la.
Well, there's something I've never heard before. That was wild. That was from the album, was it 1971?
It's called 1970.
70, yeah. This is one I've yet to find.
It's an unbelievable album, and that's one of the albums I found when I was living in Vancouver. And I just couldn't believe all the amazing songs that were on there. It was so creative, and just to call an album 1970, and of course the album cover is so cool. And that really kind of wrapped me so into the world of Roger Miller and made me want to learn more and more about Roger. So that's how the book kind of came around, was based pretty much on that album.
Wow. And now, he didn't write a lot of the songs on here, huh?
I don't even know if he wrote one song
on
there.
There's one. I guess there's the Token original.
What was the...
I know who it is.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. I'm going to tell on him. But that was Crystal Day, written by Dennis Lindy.
Yes, and I interviewed Dennis Lindy, and that's one of my more interviews that I'm proud of, because Dennis Lindy is one of the biggest recluses in Nashville. Most people couldn't believe that he actually even spoke to me about it, but he loved Roger Miller, and he was very grateful that Roger Miller cut that song, because he never knew Roger, and he kind of wrote, I guess, in the style. And the one thing, like, people say Roger was a brilliant songwriter, which he was. However, I always thought that his versions of other people's songs were just phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to play it eventually. I want to play the version of, what is it, Hey Good Lookin'?
Okay.
And which is like, it's nothing like Hank Williams. It's
exactly.
Totally off the wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had an ear for other people's songs, for sure.
Exactly. And the one thing that I kept on being told by different people I interviewed is Roger would never make a hit with other people's songs because they weren't his songs. And I thought that was pretty bizarre, because I always found that his versions were better than Janis Joplin's version of Bobby McGee. Like, Roger, I think, did the best version of Bobby McGee out there.
Yeah.
And there's been hundreds of versions out there.
Yeah, well, I guess it was around that time when he really started doing other people's songs that the industry sort of started ignoring him.
And I think he was burning a lot of bridges as well. He was apparently a lot of concert promoters were having some problems.
Well,
with
him. See that was a revelation reading the book. It wasn't out of the ordinary for him to walk off the stage real early on for, you know, the slightest of reasons.
Yeah, if someone was chanting "King of the Road, King of the Road," he'd sing the song and say, "Well, that's how I close my show, folks." Or if he was bored or someone didn't get one of his jokes, he would tell the crowd to F off and just get up and leave, or say, you know what, let's go to the casino, let's go swimming, and just stop the show. So
fly somewhere for hamburgers.
Yeah, so that was a side of Roger Miller I just never would have guessed, you know, listening to, you know, his voice. He's got such a clean voice, and he just sounds like a kind of clean-cut guy. And to see photos of him, he's very, you know, dressed up in a sweater, and you never expect that kind of behavior from him. So it was definitely interesting. And I've never even heard of other people doing that, you know, from rock acts and stuff. So I think Roger Miller was lived the rock and roll lifestyle before any rock and roll people did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the amazing thing. I mean, you talk about, you know, the drug use, which if you know anything about Roger Miller, you know there was something going on there. He's sort of famous for it, but you don't really know to the extent until you start hearing, you know, stories from some of these people.
Yeah, Waylon Jennings said Roger Miller did more drugs than anybody, and he wasn't lying. And that was definitely a side of him that I had no idea existed. And it was somewhat fascinating, kind of sad. I'm not sure if, I know he suffered a little bit with depression, and I'm not sure if he was self-medicating or if he was, if it was out of frustration as well. I think a little bit came too fast. At all the same time, he had like a TV show, and, you know, he had like a number one hit song. People were calling him from all over the place. He was playing in Las Vegas. So I don't know if it was the pills were a way to cope with it or what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to say at this point. It's kind of surprising that he didn't, you know, churn out some memoirs or something towards the end there.
Well, it's bizarre because I found an article on the internet. And actually, no, I'm sorry. I just lied there. A friend of mine in Australia sent me a CD, and it was an interview of Roger Miller, and he was talking about how he wrote a philosophical book on all of these sayings that he had, and he said it was coming out next year, and the book never came out. And so it's pretty interesting, just kind of wondering, like I just found that out since the book was printed, that this book was supposedly written. And I did actually chat with another lady who said she wrote a book with Roger, but one of their houses burnt down, and the only copy of the manuscript was in the house.
Boo.
Yeah, man. So, but I would be surprised that the publisher didn't have a copy of it.
You would think, yeah. But then back then, when it was probably typed out on paper. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if they had photocopiers back then, in the 60s. But.
Wow. Well, now, all the people that you interviewed in the book, there's at least a small handful of names that are sort of obvious by their omittance, particularly his wife Mary and son Dean. Did you attempt to talk to them at all?
I did chat with them, but they didn't seem to be at all interested in what I was doing.
Really?
So, but I gave them the opportunity to participate if they wanted to, and I kept in contact with them, just saying, this is what I'm doing if you're interested in seeing anything, but they didn't express any interest.
Huh. That's kind of odd.
It was very odd, yeah.
You'd think they'd want to, you know, keep the legacy going or, you know, build on it.
You know, perhaps they're afraid of the legacy. Or they're maybe afraid of the truth. I don't know if that's part of it, because people seem to remember Roger for being the clean-cut guy wearing sweaters singing King of the Road.
Right.
And I wouldn't say that this is a tell-all book or a sensational book by any means, but I think it's a very honest book that was written.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Rick Marcelli said in the book, Rick is the guy who discovered like David Copperfield and Jenny Jones, and he one of his first jobs was working with Roger Miller. And one of the things he said is people really like to paint people in saintly corners, and they take out the character. Yeah. So I think this book maintained the character, the truth, and it wasn't just a bunch of sensationalism stories about, you know, crazy behavior. It was all sides of him, from the very warm side that cared about his friends who were dying of cancer to, you know, the crazy side, the guy that would fly to Nashville to pick up hamburgers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's funny, you know, you mentioned bouts with depression. I mean, a lot of people, if they just, you know, vaguely know about him, they think, oh, yeah, that's the guy who did all those funny songs.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, so much of his best work, there's such an obvious, you know, downer side to his stuff. Like, we just played One Dying in a Berry in there. I mean, it's the ultimate suicide song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, A number of people said that Roger really suffered from depression, that he was a very sad person, possibly coming from his youth, because he was raised by his uncle and his aunt, and his mother wasn't in the picture, and his father died young. And So I'm not sure if that was part of it. And also, I think there was almost a depression as well because he was known for those crazy songs.
Yeah.
And there's an expectation of him to always be funny, and a lot of times people wouldn't take his serious songs seriously. They didn't pay much mind to it. Whereas if those exact same songs were written by George Jones or something, they would have been just monster hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess he felt to some degree he had to live up to that side. And like a lot of the people you talk to, you know, tend to stick to the crazy, you know, what a crazy guy he was, what a funny guy he was. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, you know, how many people really knew the guy?
Well, yeah, what you said was very true. How many people actually knew him? Because I think he hung around these guys. He would, you know, if you ever saw that episode of Seinfeld where you should leave on a high note, well, that's it for me, where George says, you know, time, for, you know, leave when you're at a high point. I think that's kind of Roger invented that. And I think he was in and out quite a bit. He would never say goodbye to his friends when he was leaving. He would just sneak out. And I got a few stories that he would start a bunch of controversy in the room, start a bunch of arguments, and then just leave. So, yeah, there was definitely some interesting things that were going on back in those days.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to play something here that I just recently dug up. This is like came into my life just like a month ago. I found on the internet. It's a crazy old single by Homer and Jethro called The Ballad of Roger Miller. Are you familiar with this?
I've only heard about half of it, so I'm looking forward to hearing this.
Oh, well, hey, you're in for a treat. And see, when I heard this song for the first time, like literally a month ago, was the first time I knew that he had a TV show, because it mentions that in the song.
Oh, really?
So, no, I'm assuming you don't have any of these episodes on tape or anything, huh?
No, I've been dying to get a hold of them, but even the people that used to work on the television show, they don't have access to those shows. But I did find out that if you're ever in New York, you can go to the Museum of Media, and you can ask them to pull up the Roger Miller Show, and you can watch the first episode with Bill Cosby.
Oh, really? Yeah. Ooh. Wow, I know what I'm doing next time I'm in New York.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, here's Homer and Jethro. And, yeah, if you don't know anything about Roger Miller, listen up. They'll learn you something.